call the meeting to order. And we have everyone here. I'd like to just go down the aisle since we have a new commissioner. And we'll start at the other end. We'll start with Chad. Chad, do you want to just say your name and a little bit about your service on the commission?
Yeah. Chad Wade, been on the commission, I don't know, about 3.5, maybe 4 years now. Local Iowa City and born and raised, so 47 years of tenure in this city, so 47 years next month, I should say.
Wow.
So yeah, excited to have you aboard.
Billy Townsend, retired. My second stint on planning and zoning. I was with you for almost 30 years.
James Davies. I have been on the commission less than a year. Also born and raised in Iowa City. So, yeah.
Maggie Elliott. I'm on my first term, and I have more tenure in Iowa City than Chad, and I wasn't born here.
My name is Caleb Ining. I'm on my first term, and I was born and raised in Iowa City as well.
My name is Steve Miller, and this is my first term as well. I've been on the commission less than a year, and I've been in Iowa City about 10 years.
Great. Well, thank you for the kind welcome. I appreciate it. Colette Atkins. I've been in Iowa City 2.5 years, so I'm the new kid on the block, and I look forward to learning from all of you. So thank you for the kind welcome.
Thank you. Do we have any public discussion for anything that's not on the agenda? Okay. Seeing a no. We've got two urban renewal items on the agenda to start with. The review of proposed Sycamore Urban Renewal Plan located in the commercial area bordered by Sycamore Street, Highway 6, and the Iowa Interstate Railroad. Rachel? Who's on camera?
Hi, everyone.
Camera?
Oh, there she is.
Take it away.
Okay, great. Well, I apologize that I can't be there with you tonight. The flu hit our house like it is hitting so many. And so I'm logging on from home to present to you tonight. But yeah, we have two urban renewal areas that we're considering adopting here in Iowa City. They were both City Council set a public hearing to consider adoption of those at an upcoming meeting. And so I'll kind of talk through each of them today. I apologize. Okay. So first I'll give you kind of a little bit of background on urban renewal and TIF in general. Oftentimes we talk about a TIF district and an urban renewal district. We use those terms interchangeably, but they're actually two separate concepts that work together. So an urban renewal area is kind of the designated area where you can conduct those projects. And then the TIF district is the funding mechanism that you use to support projects in that area. So when you establish a TIF district, that allows you to capture that increment or that increased tax revenue over the base taxes from the new development that you can then rebate back on a project. So for example, here in Iowa City, we have the City University Urban Renewal Area, which covers most of the downtown and riverfront crossings. But one project within that urban renewal area would be supported through TIF.
And can I just ask, so what's the implication for the private developer if they have TIF on that TIF on a specific building?
So the city has a TIF policy. So that policy outlines all of the public benefits that we require when we enter into a development agreement with a developer. So those would include things like enhanced sustainability standards, affordable housing. There's other kind of components in there, but we also do a third-party gap financial analysis to ensure that there is a true and meaningful gap. So we want to ensure if we're providing TIF rebates to a project, we want to be what's considered the last dollar in. So we would have a third-party financial firm do an analysis to determine that there is a true gap that the developer can't meet and that city funding or TIF funding would be necessary to help make the project go. And then in that case, that's when we apply our TIF policy, which outlines the different things that we'll kind of get back, so to speak, out of that from the developer. So whether that's affordable housing units or other, you know, design standards that we want to apply to it. But we always set, or most often set, our TIF incentives up as a rebate. So there's no risk to us up front. We simply agree with the developer that if they meet all of the requirements of our development agreement, they construct their building as they've said they're going to do, they complete all those public benefits that we've agreed upon, then they will get the tax increment rebated back to them after the fact. So that usually doesn't come till a few years after even the project is completed. So we do an annual certification on those projects to make sure that they continue to meet compliance over the life of the TIF rebate period. And that's how that would work. Does that answer your question?
Yes, that was helpful. But so that means that they don't pay taxes during that time, or what's the rebate part?
Yeah, they're paying taxes. So let me see if I don't think I have a slide that shows this. Let me just go ahead and see if I do. No. So the rebate is on the increment. So they're continuing to pay tax. So when you establish a TIF district, it sets the base value. So that's the base value of the tax that they're paying as is today. And then when they develop, they, of course, increase the property value. And with increased property value, the tax, their property tax bill goes up. However, when it's TIFed, that you, they aren't paying on that increased value yet. They're kind of pushing that off down the road. You're capturing that increment so that you can use it on specific projects like this. And then, so in theory, it kind of works like tax exemption on a portion of their taxes, but it's just rebating back the growth that they created for that period of time. And then when the TIF period's over, they go to paying that full amount of taxes. So they're not only paying that base value that they were continuing to pay throughout, but that amount that they were getting rebated back is also going to be added to their tax bill. So they'll pay that full amount.
Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Great. So under Iowa code, they require that you designate urban renewal areas as one of these definitions. So both that I will talk to you about today are being designated economic development areas. And under Iowa code, again, they have a statutory sunset, which is 20 years from the first certification of debt. So after we first certify debt on a TIF area, then after 20 years, it will sunset or expire. The process to establish an urban renewal area, first, of course, you have to develop that urban renewal plan, hold that first council meeting, which is where they set the public hearing, adopt a declaration of necessity, set a consultation meeting with the other taxing entities, and then directs it to be reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission. We've completed that step at not the last council meeting, but the one before that. And we held the consultation meeting last week. So now we're at this step, which is the Planning and Zoning Commission's review of the Urban Renewal Plan. And that's for conformity with the city's comprehensive plan. After that, the City Council will hold their public hearing that will ideally happen at their next City Council meeting. And then they'll have the opportunity to adopt the Urban Renewal Plan at that time. Separately from that, it requires an ordinance to establish the TIF district. So that would be three readings in addition to this resolution to create the urban renewal area. So the first one that I'm going to talk to you about today is the North Dodge and Scott urban renewal area. So this is a map of the boundaries.
Sorry, if I could just interject. I think the agenda that was read for the record was for the Sycamore urban renewal area. So I just want to make a note, we're going to do agenda item 5 first.
Yeah.
Does that work? For North Scott, North Dodge and Scott, and then we'll go to item 4. Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, my bad. So starting with the North Dodge and Scott urban renewal area, this is kind of a map of those proposed boundaries. So this is the commercial area that's bordered kind of by North Dodge Street and Highway 1 along that northwest boundary, and then North Scott along the western and southern boundary. And then the eastern boundary is kind of where the kind of existing campus ends. So if you're familiar with that area out there, the proposed area is about 150 acres of the ACT campus that's there now. And as I'll talk about, and as you probably know, the area is planned for some redevelopment of commercial and housing. So we have a few projects that are necessary to support that development. This area is being designated as an economic development area. So again, it means it has that 20-year life after we first certified debt on the area. In your agenda packet, I included the proposed urban renewal plan. Within that plan, it includes different objectives of the urban renewal area, which all are tied to essentially promotion of economic development in the area. It also outlines the type of urban renewal activities that can be performed, which includes things like public infrastructure, incentives for economic development, and lower moderate income residential development. It also identifies the eligible urban renewal projects. It identifies planning, engineering, attorney fees. We have not typically used those in the past, though it is in the urban renewal plan. Development agreements, which we have not anticipated at this time. And then public improvements, which is the project that we have in mind for this urban renewal area. So that's the North Dodge intersection improvements and the related utility improvements. So as you know, the JMB development is planning some redevelopment activity in this area. So this is just kind of their conceptual master plan, but just to give you an idea, they're kind of the purple shown is different housing projects. Senior housing is their primary focus at this time, but the yellow along North Dodge to the north of the graphic there is the commercial redevelopment, which will be happening. And to serve those users and tenants that are coming in there, we need to complete improvements at the North Dodge intersection. So this is kind of a drawing of that project. Again, this is necessary to support the anticipated development that's happening on the property. This was a project that was kind of already pre-planned. ACT Circle was it's not signalized here, but with the traffic counts, they knew that it would need to be at some point. However, once Iceberg Development purchased the ACT property and planned their development, through different studies, the city and the developers realized that additional access and signalization would be needed. So by adding in that fourth leg connecting ACT Drive to the ACT camp, kind of what's considered the ACT campus now, as well as adding a second left turn lane in off North Dodge Street into ACT Drive, that increased the project cost considerably. So the project cost is about $3.5 million, and we have that programmed for 2026 in our capital improvement project. Again, that project and the timing of that project is necessary to support the users that are coming in here, particularly the grocery store, which I think will be the first one coming in. And so that's kind of the impetus for this urban renewal area and TIF project. The idea would be that the city would fund the project through an internal loan, so we would lend it to ourselves from one of our funds that has the capacity in the city budget, and then we would reimburse ourselves with TIF over time. So that would, at a $3.5 million project, that would look like about $150,000 over a 10-year period. The memo I provided for your agenda packet also outlined conformity with the comprehensive plan, which, of course, is what you're tasked with today, is evaluating whether this proposed urban renewal area aligns with the comp plan. So I won't go through all of these, but we did find that it matches many of the different goals and strategies contained in the comp plan. So my recommendation would be that you do forward a recommendation to the City Council stating that the proposed North Dodge and Scott Urban Renewal Plan conforms with the comprehensive plan. But I'm happy to take any questions you have. And like I said, those next steps would be to take it to, or the City Council would hold their public hearing at their next meeting, presumably adopt that urban renewal plan, and then proceed with adoption of the TIF district. The construction project is planned to take place this next construction season. And then we wouldn't certify debt on the project until January 1 of 2027. So it would be 20 years after 2027 when this TIF district would expire. Any questions on this one?
No questions. Do we have a motion? Is that what we need to do?
Let's take public comment first.
Oh.
Okay.
No public comment.
Yeah, and then motion, yeah.
All right, do we have a motion?
I move to approve the proposed North Dodge and Scott Urban Renewal Plan as recommended by council or staff.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Discussion.
Discussion?
Discussion before I vote. Yeah. I just wanted to say that I did check with the city attorney's office, even though I am working on some projects in this area. I can vote fair and impartially. But I do think it's a great use of TIF when it gets there. But as a urban renewal district, I'm in support.
Great. Thank you. Thanks. Any further discussion? A vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposition? No. All in favor? We'll go on to number four, which was the Sycamore Urban Renewal. I think I read that one time.
This is
Sycamore. Rachel, your turn again.
Okay. Very similar here with the proposed Sycamore Urban Renewal Area. So this is a map of those proposed boundaries. So kind of orient you to the map. This is the area kind of between Highway 6 and the railroad to the north there. And then from east to west, it's kind of Sycamore Street is the west boundary. And then the edge of the Procter & Gamble beauty building to the east there. The proposed urban renewal area is... It consists primarily of older commercial development. Much of the development in this area is consists of underutilized and underused buildings and sites. A lot of the development has site layouts that are more inefficient and don't necessarily meet the modern needs of commercial, retail, and employment uses, and how people want to move through the area. There's plenty of kind of roadway and access limitations throughout the area. And so even though this area has continued to serve as a really strong commercial and employment center in our community, and especially for that surrounding neighborhood, there are opportunities to continue to improve the overall economic development potential of the area and the overall functionality of the area. So historically, we have actually established urban renewal area in this kind of general vicinity in the past. We had an urban renewal area here from 2000 to 2022. And during that time, we conducted four different urban renewal projects. In 2000, we did a development agreement on the Sycamore Mall, which included some building upgrades and some minimum occupancy standards. And that project resulted in $10.5 million in new taxable value supported by a $1.8 million TIF incentive. In 2002, we did what's shown on your screen here, which was an agreement with Playmore Development for some improvements of several buildings along First Avenue. That's where like Donut Land, Java House, the gym are currently in. And so that was about a $231,000 TIF to create a $1 million new taxable value. And then in 2014, we tried again on the Sycamore Mall. However, our agreement was terminated with that developer after they defaulted on the agreement. They were unable to maintain their 80% occupancy rate that our development agreement required. And after Lucky's Market closed, that led to their default, and they weren't able to remedy it after we gave them, you know, the required time to do so. And then in 2021, as that district was expiring and we had some unused available increment, we offered some commercial and industrial energy efficiency matching grants. Procter & Gamble did take us up on that, and we were able to help them install a new high efficiency air compressor project. So that's just an example of what we have done in the past. And there's actually been some kind of renewed interest and investment in this area. First, there's been Procter & Gamble has announced a $150 million expansion at its Oral-B facility within, so that's within this area, and that would create about 100 new jobs. And then in partnership with Greater Iowa City, Inc., the city has helped them work on their strategic investment districts, of which the Sycamore area was one. And that was really a re-envisioning process with the neighborhood and community members and different stakeholders to kind of re-envision how this area could potentially be improved or redeveloped in different ways to better meet the needs of the community. And so these two efforts combined show that, again, there's kind of some new momentum of interest and investment in this area. And so while we don't have a project in mind for this urban renewal area, we're taking this as kind of a proactive step. It's not what we typically do with urban renewal areas, but in this case, we wanted it to be in place and have the tool ready to use if the opportunity arises. It can take several months for these to kind of go through the whole process. And so we wanted to kind of get out front and establish that so we can support any efforts that may come from it. So this area is also being proposed as an economic development area. So again, it would have that 20-year life. Same kind of thing in the urban renewal plan. It outlines the different plan objectives, types of urban renewal projects, and eligible urban renewal projects. So again, we have outlined public improvements, development agreements, and then grant loan programs like that energy efficiency program I had mentioned previously. As I said, we don't actually have anything identified for any of these at this time, but we wanted to create the tool and have that mechanism in place. Again, we found a lot of conformity with the comprehensive plan and the goals and strategies outlined in that plan. I won't read through all of those, but they were included in your agenda packet. So likewise, we would recommend that planning and zoning forwards a recommendation to City Council that the Sycamore Urban Renewal Area conforms with the comprehensive plan. And then it would be the same steps going forward. Any questions on that one?
This is Colette. I just have a couple of questions. Is it typical to reestablish a urban renewal area after it's expired? I think you said, right, this expired in 2022 and we're reestablishing it again. Can you just talk through that a little bit?
Yeah, it's not, it's allowed and it's not uncommon. I don't know off the top of my head if we've done that before. There may have been an urban renewal area in this district prior even to the one from 2000 to 2022. So I don't have offhand whether we've done that before, but it's not uncommon and state code allows it.
Okay. Second question is when I think in the previous one you talked about the default, and how does that impact the city when there is a default associated with one of these urban renewal areas?
Yeah, so often it doesn't because of that rebate structure that I described earlier on at the beginning of my presentation. We structure it that way so the risk is all on the developer. If they, you know, don't meet the requirements, then they don't get the increment rebated back to them. So that's typically how it works. So in that case, then, you know, they didn't meet the requirements, so we didn't have to pay anything to them. We didn't get what we wanted out of it, but we also didn't lose financially. So when you don't use all the TIF increment that you anticipate using, you can just divert it back to the county. And so then they disperse it to all the taxing entities.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Question as well. Rachel, what helps establish the boundaries of these urban renewal plans? For example, like it ends at the P&G lot, but it doesn't flow over into the HNI or Lakeside. So I'm just trying to understand kind of what establishes the boundaries versus continuing to grow within that area.
Yeah, the boundaries are established by staff. So me, we just terminated at last night's city council meeting. We just terminated two urban renewal areas that were nearby this district, but had never been used. So those, one of those was in that area that you're talking about, James. And it had been on our books for over 20 years and had never been used. So we didn't see a reason to include it there. Again, when you're kind of creating the urban renewal area, you have to think prospectively about what types of projects might be in the area and what you might want to use tax increment financing for. And so in this case, we were really focused on kind of that opportunity for commercial and residential redevelopment that the Greater Iowa City Strategic Investment District focused on. If we wanted to focus on more of like an industrial development and employment center focus, then we would probably create a separate urban renewal area covering more of that industrial property to the more to the east.
Thanks
for that direction. Yep. But you could include, I mean, you could make it, you could have made it one big district as well.
Can you talk a little bit about kind of when that base tax value is established and how it's established? I know we have kind of a large project that is coming soon that's, you know, essentially already started. Is that going to be valued based on kind of an empty lot, or is that calculated based on the building that's projected to go there now?
So the base value will be set as of January 1 of the year prior when debt is first certified. So if we certify, so certifying debt is how we basically signal to the county that we intend to have incurred an expense on the urban renewal area and now are seeking the diversion of the tax increment to expend on that project. So let's say January 1 of 2027 is our first time that we're certifying debt on the project, then the base value will be set as January 1 of 2026.
Any further questions from the commission? None. Public, please come forward and sign in and state your name.
Thank you. I'll sign in briefly.
We do have a limit of 5 minutes.
Great. I will not take that long. My name is Katie Gerlach. I'm the Director of Programs, Vice President for Programs of Greater Iowa City, Inc., as well as the Executive Director of Better Together 2030. I am here tonight to speak in support of establishment of the Sycamore Strategic Investment District Urban Renewal Area. I know that's not the legal term you're using, but that's what we are calling it at Greater Iowa City because we've been promoting the Sycamore STRID for the last year. We've been working on it as a community, and the Sycamore area has long been recognized as a place with strong fundamentals but real redevelopment barriers, including aging, commercial properties, fragmented design, infrastructure challenges, and limited internal connectivity. These conditions have constrained private redevelopment and reinvestment for years, despite the area's strategic location and proximity to jobs, services, and existing neighborhoods. The strategic investment district process that Greater Iowa City undertook was intentionally community-informed and implementation-focused. It aligned closely with the city's comprehensive plan and direction around infill development, housing delivery, and reinvestment along major corridors. Importantly, the proposed urban renewal area does not approve any project tonight. It simply creates the framework needed to move the vision to a viable redevelopment over time. Urban renewal designation is a necessary first step in this process, and tools like TIF are not automatic or guaranteed. But without urban renewal in place, many of the infrastructure and site challenges will remain unsolvable. Housing is a critical part of this conversation. The Sycamore Strip identifies realistic opportunities to add dense housing, potentially hundreds of units over time, while still respecting zoning and processes, buffering needs, and future site-specific review. Establishing this urban renewal area will keep those options on the table and will allow flexibility as projects evolve. From a planning perspective, I also want to emphasize that this action preserves your role. Any rezoning, site plans, subdivisions, or development agreements will still come before this commission. Tonight's decision is about setting the policy and the financial foundation, not bypassing future scrutiny. Finally, I want to acknowledge the strong collaboration between city staff, property owners, community partners that have brought this forward. The level of coordination is exactly what an urban renewal district is intended to support when a district is ready to move from planning to implementation. For these reasons, I would respectfully urge the commission to recommend approval of the Sycamore Strid on behalf of Greater Iowa City, Inc., and it's a thoughtful, responsible step for reinvestment, housing, and long-term vitality. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Do we have a motion from a commissioner?
Happy to make a motion.
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
I have a question. Is there any reason why that Eastdale area is not included in this? Because since it's right across the street and there, they have the same problem.
It's included.
As Sycamore.
It's included.
It is included. Yeah.
Okay. It looked like it was included.
Any further discussion?
Looks a little.
I'm fully supportive. I think it's a great opportunity. In full transparency, I did participate in the Strategic Investment District charrette with Greater Iowa City. I found it really interesting. I think kind of to address Colette's comment about kind of renewing a district that, you know, has expired previously, I think, you know, there's some energy, I think, in maybe approaching it a little bit more proactively, which I think could help. I think, you know, a lot of the times you see these districts kind of established in a passive way, kind of hoping private development kind of takes over and runs with things. I think this opportunity to kind of approach it more collaboratively with public-private partnership kind of presents maybe a different path forward that might have a little bit more energy. So I'm excited about kind of re-energizing that area in particular.
Call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Rachel. Our next.
Thank you. I apologize. I couldn't be there again.
Our next agenda item is case number REZ25-0013, consideration of amendments related to 14-5J floodplain management standards. Madison, is this, you're up.
All right, let me get it started here. Oh, okay. And then it's
cancel that and start over.
Okay. Great. Okay. Thank you for your patience on that. Madison Conley, Associate Planner with the City of Iowa City. I'm here to present on item 6, Zoning Code Text Amendment, case number REZ25-0013, consideration of amendments related to 14-5J floodplain management standards. City Council adopted amendments to the city's floodplain management standards back in October of 2025. The proposed amendments tonight are required to address revisions recommended by the Federal Emergency Management Agency to update the code, the floodplain management ordinance. The amendments focus on updating the code language to help clarify general floodplain management standards, definitions, and processes. Ultimately, back in 2025 of October, City Council adopted the amendment to the floodplain management standards, which the primary reason was to adopt the flood insurance rate map, which is known as the FIRM, and the flood insurance study. Those were requirements by the Iowa DNR and FEMA. So ultimately, City Council did adopt that, and when the ordinance was submitted to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, they passed it along to FEMA for approval, and it was ultimately approved. There was a deadline to have this approved by December 26th of 2025. This is when the ordinance was published, and the flood insurance rate map and the flood insurance study became effective for our community. These tools are utilized to determine what structures are impacted by the flood hazard areas that we see throughout Iowa City. And previously, the effective FIRM was dated back in 2007, but now we are using the ones that have been adopted and are effective December 26th of 2025. Although FEMA has ultimately approved the ordinance, they did come back to the Iowa DNR with some comments of some minor revisions that they have for City Council to ultimately approve after planning and zoning. So that reiterates the purpose tonight. Iowa City needs to amend the ordinance adopted in October 2025 to address FEMA's comments. So those look like two revisions. One would be to include a standard where all plumbing and utility equipment associated with new construction or substantial improvement be elevated or floodproof to a minimum of 1 foot above the flood hazard elevation. And the second revision would be of the substantial improvement definition to align with what FEMA and the Iowa DNR have and clarify that the community-determined market value of the structure will be used ultimately to make these determinations. The proposed amendments are geared towards Iowa City floodplain management standards in order to help our community maintain eligibility in the National Flood Insurance Program, known as the NFIP, and these requirements do come from FEMA directly. Here's just a general summary of the proposed amendments I bring forth tonight. This would impact the general floodplain management section. Currently, we do not see that plumbing utility gas meter standard in the code. However, it was included in the planning and zoning memo and the City Council memo. It just did not make it into the ordinance draft. So this is a regular standard that is seen throughout all communities participating in the NFIP. It just didn't make it in the ordinance, so it is being presented tonight. And like I said, it does just address that any new construction or substantially improved structures do have those plumbing, gas meters, and utilities elevated or floodproofed if they're non-residential, 1 foot above whatever flood hazard area they are located in. And the second is to revise the substantial improvement definition. So this substantial improvement definition has existed in our ordinance for quite some time. FEMA, however, has updated theirs, and they would like to see Iowa City's updated to reflect what they have in their language as well. So currently in our code, it's included in your packet, but our definition allows the use of the assessed or market value to make these determinations. And Iowa specifically goes to a higher standard, the whole state, and we have a provision that states any addition increasing the floor area by 25% would also trigger substantial improvement compliance with higher standards. Not all states have that. Ours is just specific to that. And our community has adopted that as well. But what we are proposing to do is remove the assessed value option and only clarify that the market value determined by the community would be utilized in the substantial improvement determination. We would still be having that 25% compliance standard in there. That would not be changing. And then just some other language that clarifies historic structures and processes for how substantial improvements would be determined that reflect what is also in the Iowa DNR's ordinance or in their language and FEMA's as well.
I have a quick question just before we get too in the weeds. Can you kind of talk about the difference between community assessed market value and kind of sure. typical assessment?
Yeah, assessed focused more on the tax side of it, and then the market value that fluctuates more often based on the demand in the housing market and whatnot. So that's basically the interpretation that I was given for market versus assessed.
And how does the city use, how do they use that?
Yep. So what we do, we utilize the assessor's report that does determine market value and dwelling value on there. So we take a look at that and we utilize that number consistently for each report that there is. And then we do a calculation where we take the cost of the improvement over the market value determined by the community. And then based on that determination, if that's greater than 50%, that triggers a substantial improvement in compliance with our higher standards.
Okay. Is it the same for kind of commercial and residential
Correct.
Property and assuming municipal property too?
Like is Yep. It- so there's the option that if there's like an appeal or anything by a community member on the value, that they can go ahead and make an appraisal and send that in. But FEMA wants to see that it is clear that the market value is to be utilized consistently for each property.
Okay, thanks.
So to go into the analysis, there are quite a few flood risks throughout Iowa City that do require proactive management. So elevating or floodproofing plumbing and utilities, gas meters, is a required minimum standard to be a participating community in the NFIP. And this does apply to new or substantially improved structures. I will add that Iowa City does go above and beyond the minimum by regulating to not only the 100-year known as the 1% flood hazard area, but we also regulate to the 0.02% known as the 500-year. But basically, this standard would just be a basic standard that is seen throughout all general ordinances that FEMA does require from a participating community. Additionally, FEMA and the Iowa DNR both clarify that the market value, not the assessed value, must be used for the substantial improvement determination. And then again, if there are any appeals to that, community members are able to provide additional documentation to use in the cost evaluation. And then lastly, revisions align with the city's existing practices to provide clear and consistent compliance with NFIP standards that have been developed and required by FEMA ultimately. And by implementing these revisions, this allows our community to continue to receive the flood insurance that we get by being a participating community. And this is something that is required by FEMA. Therefore, staff recommends that Title 14 zoning be amended as illustrated in Attachment 2 to update requirements related to floodplain management standards in response to comments received by FEMA on the city's ordinance, which are necessary to ensure Iowa City residents and businesses remain eligible to obtain flood insurance and participate in the National Flood Insurance Program. And then that leads us to our next steps. Upon recommendation from you all tonight, a public hearing will be scheduled for consideration by the City Council. The timeline for that looks like February 17th, where Council would set the public hearing, and then March 3rd, Council would have the public hearing and first consideration. And with that, I'm more than happy to answer any questions you might have.
Seeing no questions, there any public comment? None?
Actually, can I interrupt really quick? I got two quick questions.
Sure.
So this new standard for utilities, does that apply just to the FEMA 100-year, or does it also apply to the 500-year as well?
Good question. So technically, this isn't a new standard. This standard has already existed, but our community needed to adopt it and move it forward. And this was presented to P&Z in the packet memo and City Council. So this has been seen already by our community and has been listed in. However, there's just certain parts of the language that needed to be updated. But it does, at a minimum, it does require that the 100-year 1%, it any utilities or meters, plumbing, be elevated 1 foot above. But for our community specifically, if there's a structure that's located in the 500 year, it would need to go above that.
Okay, so it would have to follow the same spirit of this.
Correct.
Okay. And then that, like, utility, I'm just understanding. Mm-hmm. When it talks about utility and plumbing, like, 1 foot above, so is that, like, for example, like a water heater? I'm just talking real-world example.
Yep, that's right. Okay. And then specifically for any, like, non-residential structures, they have the option to floodproof if they want because there's no people residing in that structure. So that's where that floodproof part comes in as well.
Any other questions? Is there a motion? Do we have a motion on the floor?
So moved.
Yeah. Is that you? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Second.
All in favor? Or any discussion? No discussion? Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So unanimous there. I lost my agenda here. Consideration of minutes from December 17th. Have we all read through that? Let's move for approval.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm going to abstain since I wasn't present.
All right. Thank you. Election of officers. So,
help.
I guess we need nominations for chair, vice chair, and secretary. We can do them one at a time.
I nominate Maggie for chair. Is that how we would do it?
You need a second or anything? I second that.
Third.
All in favor?
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Vice chair?
I nominate Chad Wade.
Vice chair.
Second.
Was that Davies? Second?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
No opposition, Chad.
Okay.
And secretary?
Yes.
Can you just outline what roles these play just for the new people?
Yeah, so secretary, their main role is reviewing the meeting minutes, if there are any issues. And then in the event that both the chair and the vice chair are not present, they would have to run the meeting.
Got it.
Billy is currently secretary?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I decline the nomination.
It isn't that easy.
Can we nominate Colette?
No, I don't want to be reviewing notes. Okay.
I could do it.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, nominate James. I'll nominate James.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Phew. Okay.
Show me the rope.
Okay, so Commissioner Elliott is chair, Commissioner Wade, vice chair, Commissioner Davies, secretary. Thank you all.
And is there any planning and zoning information?
Yeah, I do have a couple of items. At City Council's meeting last night, they adopted the state preemption ordinance that the commission saw at the last meeting related to ADUs, area variances, fireworks, multiple things. Just a quick update on the comprehensive plan. We haven't talked about it for a while, but we are continuing to work on it. Right now we're in the middle of drafting chapters, and the next steering committee meeting is March 4th. So I know some of you will be at that meeting, and we'll try to keep the commission updated as we move forward. And the last announcement is that there will not be a meeting during spring break, which is March 18th. So you can take that meeting off your calendar. If there's application that needs to move forward, we might need to look at scheduling another meeting that month, but I can keep you posted on that.
And the March 4th meeting for the Comprehensive Plan Committee is to review the draft?
It'll be the land use element and maybe another element, yeah. You have that on your calendar, the committee members, right? March 4th, it's going to be a noon Zoom meeting. Yeah, or maybe it's 11:30 or noon.
It's a Zoom meeting for council and is it?
Just for the steering committee.
Steering committee, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Anne.
Yeah.
Welcome, Colette. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
I'll move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
4-7.